Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Aye, sir.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow. Susan Fox has the weekend off. And with me is independent, we call her an indie author, but it's not, the lines blur so much. She's a fantasy author with several books under her belt. Please welcome Hollis Jo McCollum.
Hello! How are you doing, Gene?
a lot better now that I've got my audio gear all set up and working correctly. It was a challenge. You know, we've been on hiatus for a few weeks, mostly due to additional challenges having to do with running the radio station and the fact that I'm a published author myself now. So, and I'm going through all of the agony of a first-time author, and so, which I'm sure you can relate to.
Oh, yeah, and the agony, you just get more efficient at it, but I'm not going to say it lessens. It becomes more efficient.
My first question would have been, when does the hurting stop? But apparently it never actually does.
No. You become accustomed to the pain. You just develop a tolerance, that's all.
that's. So let me get my Kindle up here so that I can see what the heck I'm doing. Your first novel was To Save a World? Is that?
Yeah.
And it is the first of a series. And how many books in the series now?
Currently there's the full trilogy is out. So you have 1, 2, 3, which is the first trilogy in what I'm calling the Rashan series, which is the name of the fantasy world itself. Then I actually have two other books that I've published that are a totally different series. So I've published 5. The other series is historical dark fantasy that I'm always excited about. And the next book in the Rashan series is coming out in March, March.
So that'll be book number 4 in the Rashan series.
Yeah, well, it will be, I'm doing it in a series of trilogies. So it's a series, but I'm, you know, building it out in trilogies because I just like that structure. Mm-hmm. And so the Rashan trilogy, it's post-apocalyptic fantasy world. And To Save a World, the gods had a wars and they killed each other off. And now there's nothing governing the planet. And, you know, everything's dying, essentially, because no seasons are managed or anything like that. So that's fun for the characters. The first trilogy is about getting things back on track for the world and hopefully not letting it die. And and I, of course, allude to a lot of things. I'm a big fan of the Easter eggs and making connections in between all the books. So the next book in the series coming out in March is the first book in the Histories trilogy. Mm-hmm. And we talk about in the third book of the Rashan trilogy, To the Tear in the World, which came out last year, you meet a very old seer, like a divinator.
Uh-huh.
And she talks about some regrets she had, and like she kind of alludes to something in her past. And the first book of the Histories trilogy is what she alluded to. So it's her story from when she was a younger woman, and then, you know, the craziness that ensued then.
I'm looking at I'm looking at the frontispiece. It's just like after the after the dedication and after the map, which is lovely in this first
Thank
book.
Thank you. I do all my own artwork and design. So I did the page layout, the cover design, the map, the whole shebang.
Fantastic. You did fantastic work. That is one of the challenges of being it says the first book was through Page Publishing. Was that you or did you incorporate?
Yeah, so the first edition of To Save a World, I originally released it as a one-off. Because at the end of the first book, I do not leave you hanging. I'm not a cliffhanger author. I don't do that because I don't like it as a reader, so I don't write it. But
it's more like you want to write something where you have a nice resolved ending,
yeah,
but that leaves the door open for another book just in case.
And that's exactly what happened. I originally published, and in 2017, and this goes to the trials and tribulations, I was a brand new little baby indie author. I didn't know anything about the industry. And frankly, I didn't have the contacts and just the community around me that I have found now. You know, I hadn't really gotten myself into the author community yet. And I honestly just wanted somebody to hold my hand. So I used one of the hybrid presses, which I didn't pay them as much money as other people did because I did all my own. That was a different cover and everything, but I've always done all my own designs and I did my own legwork. I had copywritten my book. You know, I got my book copyrighted through the Library of Congress before I even started trying to publish it. Blah, blah, blah. I knew enough about legality of things to do that. But so I wanted help and I would advise people not to do it. And now I know where the resources are. And so I'm like, just find an indie author and ask them.
Ask them how it works because, oh my gosh, there are so many moving parts. I mean, if you're trying to publish, if you're trying to get your book published through traditional means, you send out query letters, you get on querytracker.net, you query, five dozen agents to be told no five dozen times. And then one agent finally says yes, they peddle your book to the various publishers. They can't get a major, so you end up with a third part, you know, sort of a second tier publisher. You get a $5,000 advance if you're lucky, out of which $1,800 comes off the top for the agent. You get $4,000 for your, for your 5 years worth of work, and you never see another dime because it won't earn out because that publisher won't put any money into advertising. And that's why people go indie.
Yep. Well, and you get to keep it all, like you do more work up front, but everything is yours.
And it's a slower build. It's a slow burn. You're not going to be, there are exceptions, but as a rule, you are not going to be making $100 a month selling your first book.
Oh, absolutely not. You will. I mean, I was lucky in the first few years if I made $50 a year, and now I'm getting much better, but I've been, I was first published in 2017. It's been almost a decade since I've stumbled my way through and I've learned a lot and I'm always happy to share. Like if people come to me and they say, I'm like, oh, please, God, sit down for a second. Let me give you so much information that I didn't know so that you don't have to make these mistakes, please.
Oh, and I'm on convention panels, and people are asking me, what do I do? How do I get my project going? And I know so much more now that I've learned in the last 6 months than I have been able to convey to people in the last 5 years of panels. It's just, you learn so much so fast, whether you like it or not. And so, let's see, where, I really derailed this conversation.
We were talking about my book.
Yeah, we were talking about your book. Let's get back on track here. The Rashan series, I love this. I love this, the frontispiece with the Celtic design. Boring gods ruined their world, but there are some who dream of saving it. Unexpected friendships breed deeper feelings as the world of Rashan falls further into chaos. Can these uncommon heroes find a way to revive the world before everything dies? You know, that's
you've got a good voice. Honestly, you've got
in a
good
world.
Trailer. Yeah, you should be doing some movie trailers or some book trailers.
Yeah, I could do another take of that later.
good promo voice. I like.
Yeah, if you want me to do like a male voiceover for one of your book trailers, I'll happily do it for free. So.
Oh. Well, thank you so much.
Keep
that in mind.
make a note of that. I will help.
Thank you. I like helping.
And you note on the next page, there's so much front matter in this. Why I write the Rashaan series, and you've played role playing games since you were a kid, and mm-hmm. writing the Rashaan series lets you relive all your role playing fantasies, and the characters are based on your best friend that are based on characters you and your best friend created, mm-hmm. and when I started reading, I thought, okay, this definitely is lit RPG. It's the very first thing, and it's got, and forgive me, but it has sort of some of the Fink. Oops, what did I just do? I just disconnected my camera. It has all of the earmarks of first novelitis. And let me see if I can get my video back on here.
It was To Save a World, I will say, while you're doing the video thing, To Save a World, it was basically, I mean, obviously I adapted it for the book. There were mm-hmm. a lot of things that were just fun and goofy during the game that I left out, and I added some things that just enhanced the actual plot. Because when you're role-playing... anyone who role plays knows sometimes you go off on a little rabbit hole that's just really silly and fun, and then your characters have to do a super hard left back into it
to get back into the story.
Yeah, nobody really cares if it's flowing. So there were a few times where I had to, you know, obviously I adapted it, but To Save a World is just the adapted game itself, like all the major milestones, plot points, villains. That was
what I noted was that, like the first two or three chapters where you were setting everything up, that's where you were sort of having the first novelitis issues, and then you immediately hit stride, and all of that went away, and it becomes transparent, and it's a page turner. And which is really an accomplishment for a first book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I really enjoy it.
Oh, I'm so happy. Yeah. I'm still
reading it, you know, just for fun. And I'm really enjoying the book.
I'm so happy you are. Thank you so much for that feedback. That makes me feel wonderful. You know, like many writers, I was writing, just not publishing beforehand. Uh-huh. I'm sure you have been, you were too.
No.
Oh, no? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just, I've been writing articles for the website sci-fi.radio for like 16 years, but it's all been nonfiction. Mm. But that said, I have written about 1.8 million words on that website. So yeah, it's given me, while I don't have the planning chops, I want to say, for writing a novel that would, well, I do have that, but it didn't come from writing for the radio station. Mm-hmm. I had to learn that myself. And I started, you know, like seven years ago and mm-hmm. then wrote 30,000 words and threw them all away and started over. You know, but you've got your book doesn't read like that happened to you. You just hit stride pretty much straight off.
Well, thank you. A lot of it was because I already had the plot. So, mm-hmm. Like I said, it was based on a game.
Huge advantage.
I already knew how it ended.
So, yeah. I think that's what attracts people to lit RPG, because you start off storytelling to start with, and then you mm-hmm. end up with, you just embellish your characters and give them motivations and give them, you know, the quirks and foibles that give them texture, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
like your Ethne,
mm-hmm.
your star character, her big thing is she wants to, you know, get the heck out of the bottle that she's in, living in that little village and never seeing anything and never being allowed to do anything important. And she wants something to happen in her life other than, you know, get married and take care of a house. I mean, who wants to, you know, that sounds like if your heart is elsewhere, that sounds like a living hell. But all of your characters have depth to them, and you worked out who they were and what their backstories were and all of this. Did you, and this is a question that mm-hmm. has come up repeatedly lately, especially for me. Do you have situations where your characters get ahead of themselves or rather get a mind of their own and go off and do things you didn't anticipate?
Oh, 1,000%. I think every author feels that they just like you have all these carefully planned plot points, right? And then you start writing and your characters run off like feral children and you just go, I had all this. Okay.
my argument is at that point, that's when you go back and you dissect it and you try to figure out where you went wrong. And then you go back and fix it so that your characters do what you need them to do for the plot, it makes logical sense, it makes emotional sense, and they behave themselves.
This is what I do.
My characters are as I write them. They don't do unexpected things because
I have control. Approach. I am a control freak about my, I am a little like, I'm a list maker, all these other things, but I'm also very like, improvisational mm-hmm. and I'm very flexible. So when things change in my real life, I'm good. I pivot, I'm fine. And I'll have a plan, but I'm okay to pivot on that plan on a dime. That's fine. Uh-huh. I'm good. And, the same thing with my characters. If my characters start going off. Life is fun. And then I'll work my way back into the plot, but I'll just have to find a new avenue to it.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's fun because it's like, oh, I don't know what's happening. Okay.
I actually did have a situation like that myself. I had this whole extra scene, this whole extra location where my characters were supposed to have all of these extra revelations. And I realized, you know, if I cut this entire two-chapter sequence out and stitched the ends together, no one would know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So out they go. You know, but that's interesting because, I mean, when I'm working on my scenes, my tendency is to, I know where points A and B are, but how I get there, that can vary quite a lot, and it might be up to the individual whims of the characters involved. You know, mm-hmm. I allow them a little bit of playroom, you know, feel spontaneous.
You gotta let them go a little bit. Yeah. I think as long as you hit your milestones, so my degree is in history. And so I wrote a lot of research papers when I was at university. Right. So when I kind of do my outlines, I do them like a research paper outline. Mm-hmm. I don't do them like most people do book outlines. I'm just like, here's my research paper.
Well, and that is possibly your superpower for creating this world of Rashaan, because as a historian, you understand the context of culture and religion and environmental bias on mm-hmm. and how it shapes the progress of not only an entire people, but the individuals within it. Being a historian gives you a unique perspective that other authors can't match. And that is why, I believe that is why Rashaan feels so real. Because when you're reading along and everything, you know, the relationships feel real, the social structures around them feel real, mm-hmm. the environment feels real. And you get the sense that if you turned your head and looked 90 degrees, there would be more world out there. So you have a consistency to what you do that grounds everything and makes it completely immersive.
Thank you so much. I'll need a copy of this interview so that everyone.
Those are lovely compliments. I'll make sure you get one.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful. and I'm so happy to hear that, because I do love history, and I am still a historian, even though mm-hmm. I was academically published. It was like 15 years ago that I was actually, you know, working in the field, if you will. But mm-hmm. But I'm still technically a historian. They certified me internationally. I count.
they I'm certifiable as well.
It never expires.
A different way,
they told
though.
Us that.
Yeah.
But it
death,
does.
Death will not release you.
That's right. That's right. I am forever. My soul will continue on as historian in uh-huh. the afterlife.
Yeah, but that really is a superpower when it comes to writing your own worlds and inventing places that people want to go visit and be in for a while. You know, and so that's probably, I would say, one of the big factors in why Rashaan is as successful as it is.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. And I'm happy that that my love of just toiling around in different cultures is mm-hmm. is interesting to others, because that's a big thing that in the new histories books, I've gotten really into I love world building, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, but I've actually developed a calendar for the world of Rashaan, because it's not our calendar, it's a different planet, right? So I've developed a whole calendar system for mm-hmm. them. I have done a little write-up that will be in the, you know, I love to front load, as you can tell, and uh-huh. I have a graphic, what we call an infographic of the design world, where I have the different elf cultures of Rashaan, and I'm like, okay, well, these are the tribal elves, and these are the city elves, and these are the Droas elves, mm-hmm. and the Rand, and I'm like, some elves you haven't heard of yet. And,
oh yeah, yeah. I've got stuff in the backstory for my book that I haven't touched yet either.
And and I love that. Isn't it fun to do that? Because you can bring those little things out. You're like, oh, good. Well, that's for book number 5 or whatever. Uh-huh. Yeah.
How many books have you got out? Was 6 and working on 7? 5.
Yeah, I've published 5. So the Rashaan trilogy, just 3, and then 2 others in the Lost Beacon Chronicles, which has nothing to do with the world of Rashaan. It's historical dark fantasy. The only thing the two series have in common is the author. Just to uh-huh. because sometimes people get, they're like, oh, so I'm like, no, they will never cross. This is not a crossover situation. This is two totally different worlds.
You are listening to this on the radio. I am seeing her on video, and I'm sorry, Hollis, you don't look old enough to have written 5 books. You wouldn't have had the time. You must write at a tremendous pace.
I am in my mid-40s.
No.
Yeah, I am. And I'm not wearing makeup today. I'm a dancer. I take good care of my skin, and I'm Italian. We've got great genetics.
I would have pegged you at 34 tops.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate being 10 years younger. Thank you.
So it's nonetheless, your first book came out in 2017. It's only mm-hmm. It's only 2025 now. You have been, that's almost like a book a year, every 14 months.
And it took me, because I published To Save a World in 2017, and I honestly just, I wrote it for myself, because I just got inspired one day, mm-hmm. and then my friends and family were like, publish that or you're in trouble. So I said, okay.
Yes.
And I did that. And then it was out. And honestly, I started getting feedback from readers who I didn't, you know, they didn't know me personally. They had just read the book. And they all were like, so what happens? And then? And then? And I'm like, well, I finished it, though. I didn't leave you hanging. And they were like, yeah, but, and then. So
You hooked them.
I hooked them. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, I always wanted to be an author. But like many people who are Gen X or whatever, I think that we're all told, oh, no, you're that's not a quote unquote real job. Creative fields are not real jobs. You have to, that's your side, you know, whatever. And that was my mentality. But then Yeah, you're on vacation now. I see that. But I just kind of had a little epiphany that I could actually, in 2019, I started writing. So for 2 years, I didn't write the start, but then the queen, I started writing the next book, The Queen Witch, in 2019. And that wasn't published until 2023. I still work full time. I do it now. I've just gotten much better at time management because I've just gotten much better at time management.
That is amazing. Because these are not thin books. You know, you're not writing novellas here.
No. They're To Save a World in particular. I have a lot of graphics in it. It's almost 600 pages, but if it were just boiled down to the text, it would be about like 420-ish. So don't get too scared. But I put graphics at the beginning of every chapter and so on and so forth. So it adds a lot of pages.
Oh yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm just, that is one of the defining features of a successful author. Mm-hmm. Is that they are able to crank this stuff out. When I first started writing, and I don't know about you, but when I first started writing, I considered myself having kicked ass if I produced 300 words in a day. And now 2000 words a day is about average.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. and you have to write at that pace or you can't make it. As an indie author, or exactly. In fact, any kind of author, you have to be able to put out about a book a year at minimum.
Oh, absolutely. That's why you have to, that's why you got to organize your schedule. If you choose to, I know some other indie authors who do, they enjoy it, they publish, but they're not in it for the career, which is fine. Everyone should do what they want to do. And those authors do take a long time in between their books. And that's good for you. You know, you do absolutely what your goals are.
But if you're trying to build a business out of it, you have to produce and you have to do it consistently. Kevin Anderson, Kevin J. Anderson, I think, he does 2 books a year.
Oof. Yeah. Oof. 'Cause his books aren't skinny either.
No, they're not. they may not be Hugo material, but they don't have to be. They just have to be good enough to sell, and they are. John Scalzi, I think he writes almost 2 books a year. And
I'm trying to think. One of my favorite authors, Ken Follett, who's historical fiction. I don't know. Have you like Pillars of the Earth? All that. He's one of my favorite authors. He's an actual historian who writes historical fiction, and he weaves beautiful stories. And his books are bricks. I mean, we're talking 700 pages minimum 700 pages with a Ken Follett book. But I think that, and he's been at it for years and years. Mm-hmm. I think he does at least one book a year. And I mean, his book, the first book of his I ever read was almost 1,000 pages. They are huge. They go fast.
What's his name again?
Ken Follett.
Ken Follett. You have to be Ken Follett in order to sell a book that long.
That's right.
That's the catch, you know, and you're not people, people who start, they write their first book and it's like 600 pages and they're wondering why the agents aren't picking them up. Yeah, well,
too long.
Yeah,
because they have their little checklist, and the checklist. Well, and I know you've probably experienced this too, but the agents are. I feel like they're all in their little sandboxes, right? Mm-hmm. And they have their checklists, and they don't necessarily look so much at the quality of the work as much as they go, okay, well, is it good enough? And does it tick my boxes? Is it roughly 250 pages? Is it this? Do they have 10,000 followers on socials? Do they have, you know, like...
Yeah, and it's all about the statistics and not so much the quality of the book. One of the things that I find that just irritates the daylights out of me is that one of the primary criteria seems to be how big a social media following you have. That's one of the things that the agents look at before they even read your damn book.
Oh, yes. I've had more than one. And I don't really query agents anymore because I'm tired of it. I'm done. But when I was querying agents, I had several tell me, because I would always ask for feedback. If they said no, I would say, could you give me some constructive feedback, please, so that I can be better? And they usually will, but they just, more often than not, they would give me, they would say, we actually think your work is really great, but call us when you have 10,000 followers on Instagram.
Oh.
And I was, and I got that answer at least 5 times. And I was like,
Holy cow.
So you love my work. They would compliment the heck out of my books. But then they would say, but call us
none of that matters if you don't have 10,000
followers. I didn't have 10,000 followers. That was the whole thing.
Well, now we know. Now we know. And every indie author in the audience knows what that baseline is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the stuff you find out, you know, talking to other authors. And I did not have this perspective 2 years ago, you know, because I hadn't published anything. And now that I have that perspective, I'm starting to know what important questions to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And that's made all the difference. And it's made all the difference for the people around me as well, who are also trying to become published authors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you do what I do, which is we help those around us trying to do the same thing. Because
always,
you know,
yeah. It's a collaborative community. That's what that's what I always say. I'm always happy to help. I like you. I love to do panels. I love to, if you need me, I will, you can DM me as a stranger. I'll answer your question. I'll do my best for you. I genuinely will. And that's just the indie author community. And I love it because frankly, if you're going to try to be competitive, you're not going to last in the community. You won't necessarily get kicked out, but people just will go, well, that's not what we do here.
And then they just because we're about telling stories. We're about giving people things they can't get. We're about taking them places they can't go. We're about giving them a vacation from their troubles for a little while and making a place in another world where they feel welcome. That's what we're doing.
We're doing it. And we're also, well, I always like to say, number one, we want to nerd out too. You read something cool or you wrote something? I want to read it. That sounds awesome. I want to nerd out with you. But also, while we're writing our next books, we really need our readers not to get frustrated with us. So we need to be able to show them lots of other good books they can read until our next book comes out.
Yes. So. Yes. And David Gerald, I won't say he's a friend, but he is definitely a strong acquaintance. I've been to his house. You know, I fixed his computer once.
Oh, nice.
And
he owes you at least a coffee for that.
Well, what he did was he gave me a thumb drive containing his complete collected works as payment.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was cool. Anyway, he once, I remember him being on a panel, and he was saying that a woman approached him and she was all effervescent and bubbly. And she says, I'm just like you now. And he said, well, in what way? He said, oh, I don't read anymore. I just write like you.
Oh,
no, no. Oh, no. That is not how any of this works. That's not how any of this works. We as writers are awash in a sea of new creativity, and it fuels us and lifts us and creates the continuum in which we swim.
Mm-hmm. And very well phrased. Well done. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And so it is refreshing for me to see that idea validated in somebody like you.
Oh, well. Thank you. Well, it is. I think that indie authors are always validating each other without like going around making an effort to do so because we are all of the same mind in that way. And we, of course, as indies, we usually read other indie authors because we want to support each other. But it is, I will say that when you first start writing, you do have to sort of, there's an adjustment period between, because the time that you used to spend reading is now your writing time. And You know,
yes.
So
yes.
There is a transitional period where you kind of have to figure out, and me personally, I don't know about other people, and this also helps me sleep a heck of a lot better too. My writing time is daytime stuff. I very rarely write in the evenings or at night, but right before bed, like I get it when I'm getting into bed, I have my book right on my nightstand and I read at least one chapter. Sometimes I'm in the middle of a really good book right now by an indie author friend. His name is Darren Kennedy.
Uh-huh.
And, he's the intrigue. It's the second book in his riddle. It's amazing. Darren builds fantastic fantasy worlds. They're just honestly stupendous. I don't know how he does it. So I have been staying up later than I should with his with Darren's books lately. Yeah, it's really nice. And then I'm not doom scrolling on the phone. Mm-hmm. I'm not paying attention to or even thinking about, oh, what do I have to do tomorrow? I need to run this. No, I'm reading about other people having really big problems that aren't mine. And I love it. I'm getting my reading time in and I go and I'm sleeping better because I'm not on the phone or you know, my mind is going into dreamland early. I'm in my fantasy realms a little early.
Yeah, that it's that endorphin loop, you know, you just get just enough endorphin from reading that next Facebook post to keep you going to the next one. And before long, the 2 hours that you could have spent writing, you have spent on Facebook. And it kills your momentum to do that. It kills your creativity to do that. And instead, we read the books for the same reason that we always did, because we love the adventure and the magic in them. Because every book, of course, is a grimoire.
Yeah. Yes.
Every book's a grimoire. It takes every one is full of magical spells that take you other places. Oh, yeah. And this is nobody at home can see this, but I'm going to take my webcam here and
okay.
I'm gonna, aim it over my shoulder. Wait.
Ooh, ooh.
That's
bookcase. That is lovely. I love that.
Over there, those are the
other bookcases. I am jealous of your collection, sir. For those of you who are listening, he has the most amazing, like just so many floor to ceiling bookshelves all around him. That's amazing.
And this is just one room. I've got another floor to ceiling bookcase in my office that's just jammed with reference books on art and writing and this kind of thing in specific. And all of this stuff behind me, these are all fantasy and science fiction.
Well, I've got my own. I'm not gonna. My laptop's plugged in, but I've got three bookshelves behind. Those are three that line the whole wall, all full. And then, and then I've got more over there with my mess as well. And those two boxes are books that came in that I need to unpack. That because I'm doing a Conjuration Con November 14 through 16 in Duluth, Georgia. I'll be one of the guests and vendors.
Oh, excellent
panelists there. Yeah, so I got my Conjuration order.
That was going to be one of the questions. Where are you going to be appearing next? Do you do book readings and signing appearances? Is that one of the things you do?
I do. I don't do them as often, just because I will actually say this past year the demand for me to show up for individual readings and signings has increased. So thank you so much, everyone. That's awesome. But I'm mostly, if you want to find me at conventions. I love doing panels. You know, when you're a helper and I'm a social person, it's so fun and you get to go hang out with your buddies and bounce ideas off of each other and make dumb jokes. And it's really fun. So, yeah, I'll be at Conjuration Con in Duluth, Georgia.
Duluth, Georgia. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's November 14th through 16th.
16. Next weekend. Yeah.
Next weekend. Excellent. That's great.
Yeah. It's wonderful. It's a huge fantasy con. The people who put it on, they're absolutely wonderful. And they, in the same location in Duluth, Georgia, in April, they have a sci-fi con called Stellar Fest, which I I'm a fantasy author, but I know Chris and Angela are they're a married couple who have organized and created these conventions, and I'm friends with them. So I'm still a panelist at the Sci-Fi Con because it's also really close to where I live. So
and science fiction and fantasy are a little bit less rigidly defined than many people think.
Oh, yes.
And fans of one are frequently fans of the other.
Yeah, so it's honestly, sci-fi is really just fantasy with technology, and fantasy is just sci-fi with the absence of technology for the most part.
Well, and then there's hard science fiction, you know, like Frederick Pohl and A.E. Van Vogt and Larry Niven and authors like that.
Yeah. So. But then you have the ones like there's a British author, Jodie Taylor, who writes The Chronicles of St. Mary's, which I'm so into this series. It's like 30. There's over 20 books in the series. I'm on book number 17 right now. I'm very entrenched and I love it so much. And it's time traveling historians, which, of course, I love that.
Of course.
But it is technically sci-fi, but. And it's set in the near future, but also nobody knows about time travel. It's like this secret society of historians that go and just record the events. And of course, hijinks ensue and trouble happens. But they're not actually trying to, they're just there to find out what actually happened and record it.
And then they not interfere with it. And somehow they always manage to.
They don't try to, but, you know, somebody accidentally gets arrested or gets the plague or, you know, things happen.
And how do you know whether that was supposed to happen? Is that part of the timeline that was supposed to happen or not? And you don't know and all of
you
it.
You don't know.
It's anyway.
It's so many, but it's very well written. She's got a great idiom or voice. I would say she's very funny. She's very, very funny. And the first book of the series is called One Damned Thing After Another, to give you an idea. She's got a great sense of humor. The characters are excellent. So if you're into time travel, it's not super tropey time travel. She has a very unique perspective, and it's not the kind that they're always like, I must avenge and I'm going to stop Hitler or some, you know.
And then there's cozy fiction, which is like low stakes, you know, smaller stuff like, you know, you go back in time and you accidentally leave your phone book, you know, or your pocketbook and the ramifications that has going through the next six decades, you know, just, or Travis Baldry's Legends of Lattes, which is...
Oh, I love his stuff. And that's a perfect example of cozy fantasy or fiction.
Yeah, almost a defining instance of it.
I would say, because I really, honestly, and maybe you have the same experience, I hadn't heard of the genre of cozy fantasy before his books came out.
I think he was one of the vanguards, really. His first one was... I think it came out, I want to say 8 years ago, you know, Legends and Lattes. Mm-hmm. And he was self-published, and he paid some artist $1,000 to do that cover.
Which is beautiful.
Which is a big, big, big leap of faith. And then somehow Seanan McGuire found him and spontaneously boosted him on Twitter or Instagram or something, and it made him an overnight hit. I mean, just talk about a lightning strike. I think I shall make this person there an overnight sensation. Zot!
But and, that's how it happened. You know,
well, I wish it would happen to me.
Me too, honestly. You know? I mean, there's so many wonderful authors out there that you just, like I was saying, my friend Darren Kennedy, he has no wish to be famous. He's actually an MD. He has a practicing family practitioner MD. He's wonderful. And he loves his, you know, medical degree job. And he's extremely prolific with the books, but I don't think he ever cares if he becomes, you know, a career, you know, somebody that is known in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. But his books are certainly good enough for that. And it kind of, and there are so many people who, once you hit your demographic, it's amazing what can take off. I have another another really good friend of mine. I think I mentioned to you I do voice work sometimes. Uh-huh. Yep. And my friend Trip Ainsworth, who writes the Smoke Pit Fairy Tales sci-fi series. And it's a 12-book series about World War III, but with robots and aliens and all sorts of things.
Fun stuff. That sounds fun.
It's really fun. He's an actual like veteran Marine. He did at least three tours, you know, like combat and all these other, he can write about war stuff, and it gets a little graphic, mm-hmm. in that. So, I mean, I'm fine with it personally, but just as a fair warning to anyone who's not okay with that kind of stuff, but he's an excellent writer, and he was toiling for a bit, but then veterans found his books. And of course,
they loved the detail because it resonated with them.
Not just the detail, but the story of what the character, because the characters are soldiers in the war, right? Mm-hmm. And he knows what it is. He himself has been through it. He knows the aftermath. He knows and that emotional impact just bam. And it was true. And it was the funny parts, the serious parts, all of it. And the veteran community just, I've known him since 2016, 2017. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I really do feel like it was like 3 days went by and I went from, you know, 5 reviews to 5,000 all of a sudden. Whoa. Like, it was like, and it was because this group of
this
veterans,
one group found him, and that's what it, and that's what it took. And
just the bomb dropped, if you'll excuse the pun.
So the name of the book that you've just released is what?
So the name of the most recently released book from last year is Terran the World. It's the mm-hmm. third book in the Rashaan trilogy. So
okay.
You've got To Save a World, which is book one, The Queen Witch, which is book two, and Terran the World, which is book three.
Great title.
And then...
Great title, by the way, Terran the World.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It's because there's a tear in the fabric between worlds, and they got to fix that. Uh-huh. You know, it's... Can't have the things leaking. You can't have this mixing going on in between.
And there ain't no such thing as medieval duct tape.
Nope, no, there is not. But there's magic, which is a beautiful device.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was low hanging fruit. And the book that you're working on now is?
It's called The Key. It is book one in the Rashaan histories. So as I mentioned in Terran the World, one of the main characters, Aram, who is, you know, the first trilogy focuses still on the four main characters, Ethne, Darien, Aram, and Yoselin. Mm-hmm. And you just have a continuation. So To Save a World is like the start. It is three separate adventures, but the relationships are developing and their lives are developing throughout the trilogy. So you won't be lost on the plot, but you will be lost on their relationship, like their stage of life. You're like, wait a minute, how do they have a kid? I thought, wait a minute. You know,
You skipped a few steps.
Yeah, yeah. You got to read that one first so you understand how their lives are going. And it's like that, but he goes to see this very, at the time, in the future, you know, in their time, mm-hmm. very famous seer, Kristen Quelvan, and she, you know, because he needs some help, and he needs somebody who can see the other side, because the tear is in the, you know, the fabric of between dimensions and things, so she's helping. And he's also going through some personal struggles, because of course, when we put our characters through it, we put them through the whole mm-hmm. ringer, not just one. Uh-huh. And she, of course, you know, says, here's the information you need about this, but let me address these personal things I'm seeing in you a little bit, because, you know, foreshadowing, I had this, and I don't want you to have the same regrets that I do, mm-hmm. because I see that your personal situation has some parallels to what mine was, and I didn't make the right decisions for mm-hmm. myself. but I couldn't ever take it back. And that was, you know, that was it. And then she also has a conversation with an old friend who is also in the key, and they kind of, and they both talk about, well, you know, regrets are awful, and we are, you know, hey, at least we have each other, old buddy, and, you know, that kind of thing. But then the key opens up on, and these are elves, and my elves live for roughly 700 years. So this is 600 years into the past.
Right.
So the key is, takes place 600 years earlier. So it's before Rashaan went through apocalypse. The gods mm-hmm. are all still alive. The world is what it was.
When we were all young and stupid and there was no internet.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so I got to write about like what Rashaan was previous to the apocalypse. I got to and also talk about this this big story that she had, because it also ties in. There's a lot of foreshadowing and tear in the world for the key, mm-hmm. Which I, because yeah, I don't want to go too deep into anything, but there's a lot of foreshadowing. So
awesome.
if you read the Rashaan trilogy first, and then when you pick up the key in March, you'll be like, I see.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to Hollis Jo McCollum, the author of the Rashaan series. And she's working on the upcoming novel, The Key, which is part of the Rashaan Histories.
Yeah.
And it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. I've really enjoyed this conversation, probably more than I've enjoyed one in a long time. And I'm very grateful that you decided to take a turn here on The Event Horizon at sci-fi.radio.
I love doing it. It was so nice talking with you too, Jean. And I hope that I can meet Susan one of these days when she's, I know she deserves a break though. We'll let her have a break.
You have been listening to episode 289 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for November 8th, 2025. Our guest this evening has been Hollis Jo McCollum, dark fantasy writer and author of the Rashaan trilogy and the upcoming History of Rashaan series. This show will air again tomorrow, November 9th, at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi radio and becoming a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and even for the equipment we must procure and maintain in order to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting on this basis continuously since 2009, and we are grateful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is, again, patreon.com/sci-fi radio. This episode is copyright 2025 by Krypton Media Group Incorporated. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.